you are just now $20,000 behind in the game of acquiring Bitcoin.
That's interesting. You think Satoshi Nakamoto is American?
He can't destroy the value of your money.
Yeah, the halving is almost here. You know,
I dumped all my stocks.
Yeah, it is a secret society.
Jeff Bezos was seen on a boat with Michael Saylor.
It's Mandana.
And Ian.
Welcome to Flirting with Bitcoin.
Season 3.
That's right. 3 years ago, I tricked Ian into a weekly date night.
I let you trick me so I could teach you about Bitcoin.
Well, it worked. I'm very excited for the halving.
You should be. Bitcoin's about to do what Bitcoin's about to do.
Ooh, okay then. Kian, can we start the show?
Okay. Let's go.
Hey, babe.
Hey, Mandana.
We are in our new recording studio.
Oh, yes, we are.
It's still a work in progress.
It can be both.
Which one is it?
I mean, the word is progress.
It is progress, yeah. But it's a process because we are trying to improve the audio of the pod, but also like have a nice romantic date situation when we're recording.
Half of those are your goals. Half of those are mine.
I thought we share goals, relationship goals.
Yeah. But it's like 2 p.m. If this is date night in 2 p.m.
Whenever we have babysitters, it's date night.
Okay. Sounds good to me.
So I'm excited because today we are going to talk about how Bitcoin is hitting all-time highs all around the world. And could we be seeing the end of Bitcoin FUD? We investigate. Okay, but first we need to say hi to our listeners. You ready?
I am always ready.
Hola to Spain.
Namaskar, Nepal.
Guten Tag, Germany.
Hola, Brazil.
Sawadee, Thailand.
Good day, United Kingdom.
Good day, Canada.
Hola, Argentina.
Buongiorno, Italy.
Namaste, Bharat, aka India.
Kamusta, Philippines.
Bonjour, France.
Hola, Portugal.
Hello, Indonesia.
Hello, Netherlands.
Konnichiwa, Japan.
Witam, Poland.
Zadrivet, Bulgaria.
Hola, Venezuela.
G'day, Australia.
Hola, Mexico.
What's up, Nigeria?
And howdy to Texas. What time is it, babe?
The current time is 833-007, and we are approximately 813 blocks since our last recording. And we are only 6,993 blocks until the halving. It's been a while. Like, we used to be saying like 20,000 blocks, 30,000 blocks. Now we're less than 7,000.
It's here.
I mean, it's not here, but it's...
Well, you said that the halving isn't just right when the halving happens. Like, we're in it already.
I mean, as far as like the mechanics of what it does to the price of Bitcoin, supply and demand, and people, like, yeah, we're in the halving.
Yeah.
That started about 6 months ago, but... it's just weird. Like, that's part of the reason why we put these numbers in here, to just be like, wow, it's close. Before we started recording, I saw another podcaster posted like, you know, we're exactly 7,000 blocks away. Like, It's like, it's a global holiday. It happens for everyone at the exact same time.
I remember when you told me about it 2 years ago and it felt so far away. And I was like, are we going to throw a party? We should throw a party when it comes. And
now we're going to a party.
Oh my God. It's so exciting.
A lot easier to go to parties than throw them.
I love throwing parties though. But
well,
who would come to our Bitcoin halving party here?
I don't know. That's a good question. Maybe when there's a lot more Bitcoiners in the area, we could be the organizers of the DC area Bitcoin halving party.
Mm.
I think there are people throwing halving parties. Like, there's Bitcoiners here.
We've already had one really good party talking about our wedding.
Okay.
Our wedding was fun.
Yeah.
It was just a party.
Yes. Yes, it was.
Yeah. We could, I just, you know, put me back into the party planning business and I'm in.
Yeah. I'd rather just have someone else do all that.
I had a wedding planner.
Exactly.
There's still work, but anyways, I'm excited. I'm really excited, but it does feel like I'm in it. Some of the things we're going to talk about today, it feels like everyone else is in it too, and they're very aware of it.
Well, that's the thing about Bitcoin. Everyone's in it, whether they want to admit it or not. Like, you either are in it and you have Bitcoin, or you're in it and you don't have Bitcoin.
And it's like, by default, if we're in your life, you have either made the choice to get into it or ignore it, right?
I think at this point that's a fair
with
statement.
Us, right? Like specifically with the people in our lives.
I mean, I don't have any merch or swag that specifically says Bitcoin on it yet, but you can't be around me and not see like Bitcoin related things. So
I don't talk about it that much. I definitely don't talk about it at work.
Yeah, I talk about it with like a few people at work.
I compartmentalize my life.
But I digress.
But yeah, the halving is almost here. You know, every week I ask, what time is it? And it's halving time.
It's halving time.
Does anything else really matter? Maybe what matters equally as much that we try to not focus on is the Satoshi price index. If I gave you $1, how many acres could I get on Sunny Bitcoin Island?
Today, you could get 1,593 acres for $1, aka Satoshis.
I used to get so much more land.
Land is getting very expensive on Bitcoin Island.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's very similar to like the discovery of the New World and Manifest Destiny in that you go pull up some of the articles of people going west and you see articles that say like land, like 3 cents an acre, you know, 10 cents an acre for land in Iowa. So people bought hundreds of dollars of land, you know,
mm-hmm.
Fundamentally that land goes for thousands of dollars an acre today. Bitcoin is going to do the same thing. It's just happening digitally. Bitcoin itself is the island. It is the land. The Satoshis are the acres, as we say. And right now you can get more than 1 acre for a dollar. But there'll be a time in the future where you won't be able to get a single acre for a dollar. I don't know when that will be, but you can't get an acre of land in Iowa for a dollar today. And there's going to be the entire planet trying to buy that land, not just the people that are citizens of the United States.
Yeah, you know, that's the weird part about the price going up is that all of a sudden, like, my intimate private relationship feels public again. I feel like I need to check in with people about Bitcoin now. Okay, do you have any questions? What are you thinking about? If you have any, don't sell it. And it's like this very uncomfortable conversation that no one's excited to have. It's so weird.
I only have a few people that I'm like, quote unquote, working on. And everyone else, I'm just kind of like, you're an adult. You've made your choice. Like, I'm not here to like make you do something. A lot of people I know didn't buy Tesla,
mm-hmm.
you know, unless it's their idea or someone very, very famous, I guess, tells them to just do it. They just won't. So Bitcoin will be the next thing. And, you know, hopefully I live to see what the next thing after this is. Maybe I could be right about that. And maybe the third time they'll be like, you know, Ian was right. So maybe this third time I'll listen.
I don't know, babe. Probably not. I don't think it's you. It's them. It's definitely them. All right, but quickly run it down for me, like the price of eggs, beef, gas, that kind of stuff. Let's not do milk anymore. Give me something else. No one's buying hundreds of gallons of milk. Nobody understands.
I mean,
comparison.
A lot of people are buying hundreds of gallons of milk. That's why it's a commodity with the price. But I get what you're saying. Eggs are 5,096 satoshis. A kilogram of beef is 5,462 satoshis. Gas is 3,766 satoshis. And those are all down 13.05% since our last recording. So your life just got over 10% cheaper.
Wild.
From one recording to the next. And what I added to replace milk, because it is silly how we have to caveat it, is I added cheese. So I don't have a change in the price of cheese, but today you can get, I believe it was 5 pounds of cheese for 2,700 satoshis.
It's a steal.
It's a steal. And just for our favorite people out there, the gold bugs in the world, this number is also going to go down over time. You can get 1 ounce of gold for 3,216,000 satoshis. We'll see what it is next recording.
Gold I'm interested in, so thank you.
Good, good, good.
It's good to know. Good to know.
And let's not forget the Satoshi savings calculator. I'm just going to assume you just found our podcast and you have no Bitcoin. I hope that's not true. But if you do, you only got 58 days until the halving. It'll take you 1.7 million Satoshis a day to get to one Bitcoin. And at today's prices, that is over $1,000 a day. On a weekly budget, there's only 8 weeks into the halving. And if you have no Bitcoin, it'll take you 12 million and a half Satoshis per week to get to one Bitcoin. And at today's prices, that's $7,800. Again, These are only going to go up. And if you're on a monthly budget, you got 2 months into the halving, actually less than 2 months. That'll take you about 50 million Satoshis or 31,000 a month. Check out goals.flirtingwithbitcoin.com. You can plug in your own currency. You can plug in your own goal date. Maybe it's the next halving. You think those numbers will make more sense for you. But this halving is going to be extreme. So get as much as you can rationally before what looks like April 20th and ride the wave with the rest of us.
I'm so nervous.
What are you nervous about?
No, I'm just nervous for everyone.
Why?
What's about to happen?
What do you think's about to happen?
I don't like if Bitcoin hits some crazy number.
Define crazy number.
Yeah, I guess like 100,000, but 100,000 is still not like, I don't know, 500,000.
Okay. So what, but what, why are you nervous?
It's like the ramifications of that for people who didn't do that. Just all the regrets that people are going to have.
Why are you nervous about other people's regrets?
I'm empathetic.
That's different than nervous.
Yeah.
We talk about this a lot on the pod. It wasn't like Bitcoin was like created in a lab in secret. Like it's been talked about for 15 years.
Yeah.
To the point where even the like rich people are just today getting into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is the reality. It's just, I understand why people have not given it a chance. I wonder, you know, if you weren't my husband, would I have gotten into it?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
We'll never know.
Thank goodness.
Maybe.
Maybe. What does maybe mean? You said we'll never know. And then you say maybe.
Saying you're nervous about how other people are going to feel just sounds like virtue signaling. Like, personally,
no.
Well, it sounds like virtue signaling because, like, I don't think about how other people are going to feel.
You don't?
I don't, because I'm surrounded by people that either have it or have actively told me that they don't believe or care about it. So, like, I don't, those people.
I have a third category.
What is that category? People you don't know?
No, people I know that are like, I don't know, you know, not like.
Yeah,
they made a decision. They're like, I don't know.
But that is a decision, right? Like that is a decision.
Yeah.
Inaction is action, right? You're choosing not to act. I think with our podcast, you could say the action is like not listening to our podcast.
Yeah.
If you do listen to our podcast, then the action would be not reading the books that we've recommended. Because I would argue that listening to this podcast is not enough.
Mm-hmm.
Like Ian himself cannot build the conviction that you need in this new invention, right? There were people who thought the internet was just a fad. And now all those people aren't listening to my podcast over the internet, right? So like, there's always going to be that group of people that think this new thing is not going to last. This is just the latest version of that. The only difference is, yes, to your point, there are dramatic ramifications for ignoring it. There weren't that many dramatic ramifications to ignoring the internet. Like there's a famous interview with, I think it was like Bryant Gumbel and Katie Couric, famous like, you know, news celebrity people or like daytime talk show people or whatever. And they're like laughing and joking about
email.
No, they're like, it's whatever. It's all of it.
I've seen the
It's all of it.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
They didn't lose a job because they didn't understand it. Everything just changed around them and they eventually got an iPhone and just conformed, right?
Yeah.
They still are famous television people. They still made millions of dollars. They weren't required to know. Other people around them knew. Bitcoin is the same. It's just that hypothetically, if we insert Bitcoin into that conversation versus the internet, they probably would have still done okay, but there's going to be a lot of people that are doing a lot better than them, and they're going to wonder why. And they're going to say things like, oh, they just got lucky because they bought Bitcoin. That's not true.
Mm-hmm.
I basically went to 4 years of college to get the Bitcoin that I have, right? And there's a bunch of people sitting around basically saying, when you say like, I don't know, it's like, I'm tired of learning. I'm so tired.
Yeah.
I'm so tired of reading books.
It is.
I'm so tired of new information.
Yeah.
I thought I knew everything I needed to know, like my grandmother.
Who's this impersonation?
I'm just saying like that's when people act like that, I would just at the end of that say like your grandmother. Like, your grandmother can't imagine this world.
Yeah.
Things change. New things come up all the time.
I'm 100% with you.
I care, but I don't think about them.
I know you don't, but you know, for me, like the whole reason I wanted us to do this podcast is to help people understand it in ways that no one else is getting them to get it. Like I really think our conversations can help kind of unlock people's brains in that way. I'm hoping, you know, people tell us, you know, they listen to us with their spouses and things like that. So that's just a perspective that I think about a lot. I think about places where someone's going to be like, oh man, like I really was not listening to them.
But it doesn't matter because unless they change that behavior, it's going to happen to them again in 4 years.
Yeah. It's just going to keep happening.
It's just going to keep happening.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like as...
So like it's not on you.
This countdown to the having is very dramatic and intense, but it's going to happen again 4 years from now. It's just going to keep happening. It's
going to happen every 4 years until we're all gone.
And we don't even know like which one will be the biggest having.
They're technically all equal. Like if you're a Bitcoiner, they're all equal. If you're not a Bitcoiner, mm-hmm. one might be more dramatic than another.
Because I definitely want to talk about what's going on in the media, but I feel like that's almost where the narrative is right now, which is like the halving's going to come. Is it too late? Is it too late to buy Bitcoin?
I mean, that's one set of media, and we can get into that in the next segment. But what I would say is that the thing about Bitcoin is its predictability. So one of the things that we've all been suffering from, I'll say since 1971, but really since 1913, is there's a bunch of dudes in a room that decide that they're just going to crash money, right? I'm in the middle of rereading The Creature from Jekyll Island, which talks about the creation of the Fed. And the chapter I was reading last night talks about how when Andrew Jackson became president, his number one goal was to like take down the Fed. And so he was one of the first presidents that actually made an appeal to the United States people. Because up until that point, you kind of just appealed to like other politicians who had been elected by the people. But he thought this issue was so big that he went straight to the people. He ran on this issue. He got elected on this issue. And the guy, there's like a specific guy that he was battling with. Well, that guy just decided that he was going to destroy the United States economy until people didn't do what Andrew Jackson wanted to do. There was just one dude that just was like, no, y'all all going to be broke because I'm upset because he controlled the money supply. Mm-hmm. So we've all been suffering with this problem of random people just being upset or wanting to get some policy or whatever. And they just affect all of us. If you're holding your wealth in Bitcoin, that guy can do whatever he wants. It doesn't affect you as much. It will affect you because it'll affect the people around you. But he can't destroy the value of your money. He can only destroy the value of his money. And so with Bitcoin, like once you internalize those kind of concepts, which require reading, which require taking in more knowledge, I would argue that if you're not mad at the state of affairs and mad at how these things actually are operating on top of us, you'll never actually just make the move. Seeing the price go up and being left behind might be a signal that I should do something different. But I think it's really being upset at the fact that like, what do you mean this one guy can just do that? Like, that's crazy. But we know every 4 years, the supply gets cut in half. And we know every 4 years, when that price goes up, demand's going to increase. So every 4 years, you get less supply, more demand. And that's going on until 2140.
You're doing a lot of talking, and we haven't even done housekeeping yet. You got to hold these insights in until it's time, Ian.
Sure. So housekeeping.
Do the shout outs you need to do.
We got a merch store. Check out store.flirtingwithbitcoin.com. We have, at the moment of recording, at least one design on there. But by the time you guys hear this, we might have two or three. Also, check out our Telegram group. It's t.me/flirtingwithbitcoin. I've been working with our producer today to set up some cool bots on that chat group. It'll like give you the price of Bitcoin, and we'll like post when people boost on Fountain, the message that they left will go into the group. We're working on a lot of stuff there. So join, you'll see the new things happening. Twitter, Flirting with BTC. Instagram, Flirting with Bitcoin. Noster, link in description. And of course, there's our website where you can sign up for our newsletter at www.flirtingwithbitcoin.com.
Hey, it's Mandana. We're in season 3, The Halving, and I'm making sure we drop a new episode every week. We are dreaming big for Flirting with Bitcoin, and the only thing standing in our way is time and money. Let me be transparent and talk real numbers. Through Value for Value, our listeners directly paid us 100,000 sats in season one. Season two, we made 1 million sats. Of course, now we gotta see if we can 10x again and reach 10 million sats this season. Hashtag relationship goals. If we earn 10 million sats from the work we put into this podcast, it'll be the sign that one of us can do this part-time, maybe even full-time. Send us Bitcoin or shop our merch store. It all helps with the goal. You can also give us an old school shout out on social, listen to us on your favorite podcasting 2.0 app, or make and share clips of the show. Your support in any form is value we appreciate. Go to flirtingwithbitcoin.com/support and let's experience value for value together. So Bitcoin is popping all around the world.
It's moving.
So I kept seeing ATH, and then I put the pieces together.
Alcohol, tobacco, and horseradish.
No, I think it means all-time high.
Oh, that too. Yeah,
oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So Bitcoin is ATH in how many countries?
Last time that I checked, shout out Nipsey Hussle, over 30.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It is a lot.
Now, there are a lot of countries, you know, that like have historically been having monetary problems. I think Lebanon in particular, just a little trading lingo, but they'll do like, they're called candles. You'll have a candle on any interval that you want. So hourly, minute, daily, monthly, or whatever. I don't know the interval, but Lebanon had a 5 billion, whatever their unit is, lira candle. It went from 1 billion per Bitcoin to 6 billion per Bitcoin.
Wow.
And I think it was a month. I think it's been like the run-up that we've all seen. It was a 5 billion move.
So what does that mean?
Bitcoin was 1 billion lira. I believe it's the Lebanon lira.
Yeah, so their economy has completely crashed.
I mean, it's already crashed, right?
Or does it mean their people have picked Bitcoin?
This is the thing about Bitcoin is people look at that and say, oh, wow, I had a billion lira. And now because I had Bitcoin, I have 5 billion or 6 billion lira when, well, you don't want the lira. It's just everyone that's left behind is going to take them more lira to get the same amount of Bitcoin that you had. So your Bitcoin didn't change in value. Their lira changed in value. The lira has already been like just destroyed for the past 3 or 4 years. We've talked about people robbing banks to get their money out, stuff like that. But I was just using that as an example to say like the lira moved their, in their units, 5 billion units. Now, we're not going to see that in America, but this move that just happened is the biggest move in dollar terms in a monthly, in a monthly candle for the dollar. It moved $20,000.
And so that's why people are now like arguing about whether or not it'll hit an all-time high in the United States.
I mean, it's gonna hit an all-time. Like, I don't want to, this is not investing advice. This show has no financial responsibility.
It's not, but Ian's like, I feel bad for you if you just found out about Bitcoin because it's going to cost you $30,000 a month to catch up before the halving.
I do. I feel really bad. I'm glad that I figured this out before we hit that number.
You just said you feel bad. I was saying I feel bad
too.
No.
What I'm saying is that like, it is what it is. Like, I don't affect the price of Bitcoin. The only way that I affect the price of Bitcoin is by getting rid of my dollars. Right. So I've decided that I would prefer to hold all of my money in Bitcoin rather than dollars. Other people want to hedge. Okay, hedge. But we just moved $20,000 in a month. You can't save $20,000 in a month. You have no side hustle that'll make you $20,000 in a month. You are just now $20,000 behind in the game of acquiring Bitcoin. Right. There's nothing wrong with that. In 4 years, there'll be somebody else who didn't acquire over 4 years. And you know, the cycle will repeat. But what it's really saying is that it takes more and more of these units, whether they're dollars, euros, yen, Lebanese, lira, right? Like whatever unit you want to talk about, in 30 countries, it is taking the most number of units it has ever taken to get one Bitcoin. And the number of countries that are going to hit an all-time high, it's going to hit every single country. Every currency is going to hit all-time high every 4 years. So like you just pick which one you want to get in before. Like that's the only choice you have really is like what all-time high do I want to get in before? do I want to get in before 69, which is our previous all-time high, or the one that I don't know what it's going to be next? I would argue that BlackRock and these ETFs that launched, they decided we want to get in before 69. They got a bunch of smart people on payroll that told them, you better get in before 69 because we can't even tell you where it's going after that. All we know is that it's definitely going back to 69. And you saw, bing, bang, boom, ETFs launched, and they all got in before the all-time high.
So one person said to me in response to something I shared about Bitcoin doing really well, they said, all tech stocks are doing well right now.
False.
Why are some doing well right now?
There are only 7 companies that are doing well right now. This is like document. It's the Magnificent 7. It's like, you can Google it. People have been talking about it for the past 6-9 months.
Didn't Meta like very recently have a huge jump in the stock?
It's Meta, Apple, Google, Nvidia, Tesla, Microsoft, and one that I can't remember. And I always forget the 7th.
Okay, but they're all doing well right now.
Those 7 stocks represent over 90% of the gains in the stock market.
Yeah, that's wild.
There's more than those 7 companies that are tech stocks. Mm-hmm. Oh, and MicroStrategies, who has like all the Bitcoin, right? So like, well, I don't think they're calling him one of the Magnificent 7, but they should. Because MicroStrategies isn't even part of the S&P 500, so they're not counting them. This myth that all tech stocks are doing well is, first of all, just not true. It's just those companies that I listed plus the one that I can't remember. Oh, and Amazon. That's the one. And Amazon. Sorry, I left out Amazon. I forgot about rich boy Bezos, right? So these tech companies are doing great, sure. But what's also happening is that all the people that have stock in those companies, like Jeff Bezos, are selling. They're selling at all-time highs because word on the street is Jeff Bezos was seen on a boat with Michael Saylor.
Oh.
So there's a lot of things at play that lead me to believe Zuckerberg sold like $500 million or $1 billion worth of stock. I'm betting he's moving that into something a little bit more stable like Bitcoin. Bezos just sold like $8 billion worth of stock. I'm betting he's probably part of this move from 40 to 60. You know, Bill Gates is always selling stocks. So that doesn't really matter. But all these guys at these tech companies are selling right now. This is the thing about the stock market. And this is the thing that you won't really internalize until you have Bitcoin for a long amount of time is that we just watched that, I guess it's a documentary, but it's a movie. What was it called? Dumb Money?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The GameStop story.
It's the story of GameStop, right?
It was good. That was a good movie.
It was good. You know, I'll give it credit. Like the whole time I was watching it, I was like, man, the conviction that they're showing these people having, that's the conviction you need to hold Bitcoin. They even used a lot of the terms like diamond hands and paper hands, all that fun stuff. But the thing that they were missing was they were all referencing a person. They were like, if he's not selling, I'm not selling. And this guy was going on Twitter or whatever, YouTube every night, presenting his evidence, saying he wasn't selling, and yada, yada, yada. Those people that they're showing in that documentary are called retail. And they lay this out in the movie. But retail is the exit liquidity for Bezos. When regular people say things like, tech is at an all-time high, I'm going to buy more stock. Who do you think you're buying it from? But the billionaire who's dumping it because he needs to get out. Again, this is not financial advice. This is just something that I've learned or at least have internalized as probably true is that when you see these tech stocks at an all-time high, it's because people like Jim Cramer are manipulating the price up and keeping it up so that those people can sell and get out. That is what's happening. So yes, they are at an all-time high because they need it at an all-time high so that all those people can sell under the cover of, well, it was at an all-time high. You had to take some profits. No, they're just dumping, as we say in the Bitcoin world, they are just dumping their shitcoin on you. It's just stock, right? Some people are going to be left holding the bag. You might have to wait a decade for the stock price to recover, right? It's all the same thing. It's just that we're so accustomed to that, that no one even questions it. But once you step out of that world and you look at it as a Bitcoiner, it's like, wait a minute, they're always selling when it's all-time high. They're always selling.
Mm-hmm.
Not only are they always selling, they're always like creating more shares and selling. They don't even just only sell the shares they have. Like I'm quote unquote a fan of Elon, but like Tesla just created shares and sold them for cash. It's like, oh, you had 1% of the company. Now, because we made shares, you have like 0.75. It's like, what? Okay. Where's the only place you can't do that? Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. No one can just make more units and sell them. So tech is not at an all-time high. It's just the Magnificent Seven, number one. Number two, if you're buying stocks right now, you are the exit liquidity for Jeff Bezos and his ilk. Like, I dumped all my stocks going on almost a year ago. They are not getting any more money out of me. I'm not playing that game. But I understand why people think that, because if you're not a Bitcoiner, you don't really have another point of view to look at what's going on. You're just looking at it through the same lens that you've looked at it for years and what's been told to you. You know, I was saying earlier before we started recording, like this time last year, Jim Cramer was on TV marketing Silicon Valley Bank as a great investment, like weeks before it disappeared. Mm-hmm. Why did he do that? You telling me he had no information? He had no idea that was going to happen. Nobody knew. Nobody knew Silicon Valley Bank was about to crash.
Do you think that he tries to keep the value of things high right before they're about to crash?
Yes. Jim Cramer.
Like, people strategically inform him about what he needs to cover, and he somehow profits from it.
I don't have any evidence. I'm not building a case mm-hmm. against Jim Cramer. Other people are doing mm-hmm. that. What we do have evidence is...
I'm not saying I don't believe it. No. Just like, how has he gotten away with it for this long?
What I do have evidence of, that's a great question, right? What we do have evidence of is that people made an index fund, or I guess an ETF, really, that just trades against whatever Jim Cramer says. If Jim Cramer says buy Amazon, it sells Amazon. If Jim Cramer says buy Silicon Valley Bank, it sells Silicon Valley Bank. That thing is up a lot. So just trading against whatever Jim Cramer mm-hmm. says would have put you in the green over the last like 5 or 6 years. How can someone be that wrong all the time and have a television show where they're giving literally financial advice to people on what to invest in? Like either you're incompetent or you're evil.
Yeah. I mean, I know a lot of people have gone after him like a decade ago and nothing came of it. So I don't know what's going on.
There's a lot of truth telling going on, I would say, in media in general. Whether it's in sports media, political media, science media, like all places that had gatekeepers, there's just an overwhelming body of knowledge on the internet that has no gatekeepers that can actually combat a lot and prove that these people are wrong. And we just hit a critical mass during COVID. Like during COVID, that gatekeeping concept just fell apart. And so now I think a lot more people have lifted their blinders and are seeing like, wait a minute. For example, the most recent clip of Jim Cramer is he's literally like, I mean, I'm not going to say he's crying, but he's like very upset at the fact that Bitcoin is going up. And his statement was, what has Bitcoin done for humanity? Because he can't fathom what it's doing for people. And what it's doing for people is that you can't just print money and rob us anymore. Mm-hmm. You can't rob the entire planet by printing money. That's what Bitcoin has done for humanity. His thought process doesn't even fathom a world where how things currently work are bad for anyone. And there's a lot of people that wear suits and ties and sit in front of very expensive cameras, in front of very expensive microphones, live in multi-million dollar homes, make $50 million a year, going on TV and talking, mm-hmm. and they don't even have to be right. They don't have to get anything right because they aren't earning their money. They're just being paid by someone who's already got the money. We make no money off this podcast. Okay, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. No one's going to fire me.
You might get canceled.
You can't cancel me. What are you going to do? Tell me to stop recording?
That's true.
So getting canceled is part of the old system. When you need someone to put you in front of that microphone, to put you in that chair, you got to play a game to get to that spot. Now everyone's got $500 Rodecaster and can put together an equivalent product, right? My two favorite people proving this is Cameron and Mace. They literally put together a YouTube channel that's like competing with ESPN.
Good for them.
Good for them, right? Yeah. Now they've talked about some of the numbers. They put in like $200,000. So $200,000 gets you competing with ESPN, gets you interviews with players, gets you interviews with coach. Like they're bringing all the people to them. Why? Because people are tired of playing the ESPN game. They don't want to deal with ESPN's nonsense where ESPN says, oh, you can't talk about that, right? Oh, we'd prefer it if you didn't talk about that. Right. And that's what Jim Cramer and all these people on television are dealing with, is that there's someone else saying, you can't talk about that. I can talk about whatever I want. Now, I'm not gonna talk about it with you because it's like, there's nothing really to talk about there. But if I want to talk about Bitcoin, I can. there's no gatekeeper that says, Ian, hold on, like, let us buy up all the Bitcoin first before you tell everybody to buy Bitcoin. They're not used to being front run with information.
And this obviously gets to what I want to talk to you next, which is the FUD. But do you think that there are Bitcoiners out there who wish that everyone was quiet?
I don't think that that's the way I would phrase that. I would say there's probably a ton of Bitcoiners out there that are quiet.
Mm, I think so too.
For sure, mm-hmm. Right? But I don't think that anyone wants it to be quiet. I think everyone wants, I can't speak for everyone. I'll speak for myself. I just want people to understand. I think once you understand what it is, you have no choice but to make one decision. That understanding just takes so much time that unless there's people actively out there in the world trying to explain to you what it is, I think I would eventually have understood it, but it definitely would have taken me twice as long if there wasn't all the content that existed.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until, I mean, like, I was getting there, but then, like, people like Michael Saylor showed up and just broke it down from, like, a business perspective of this thing called Bitcoin is great for business. Oh, well, I'm not a business person, but he explained it to me like I was five, how it was good for his business, why he was doing what he's doing. 2-3 years later, we see it playing out, and it's like, oh, thank you for that example, you know? So everyone's just trying to put their example in the world of how Bitcoin is helping them do their thing. There's a guy that makes wine in Colorado who his wine business is blowing up. You know, there's people all over the world that are like, this Bitcoin thing really like helped me out for no other reason than I didn't realize how much inflation was really wrecking me. Just that alone. There's other things that it helps you with as well. If your business made you $100,000 last year, and then by the end of next year, your $100,000 is only worth $50,000. Like, oh my God, I worked really hard for that $100,000. That's what Jim Cramer can't imagine. He can't imagine that someone sees their year's worth of work just get cut in half. So personally, I want everyone to understand because I think once everyone understands, just not even everything, just like some core concepts, they will all come to the same conclusion, which is a bare minimum. Like, I got to learn what this thing is for real. But at the same time, no, I get it. If there's somebody out there that's like, y'all should shut up because we used to be able to get 10,000 sats for a dollar. So we're all working harder to get Bitcoin because we're all talking about it. Nothing about it will change if we talk about it or not. Bitcoin will still be Bitcoin. Now, it might take us all a lot longer to get Lamborghinis and yachts and stuff off of Bitcoin. But fundamentally, if no one knew about it and you kind of had to like be led into the club, wouldn't that just be recreating the old system? It's a different system where like no one's printing the money, but it's still like a secret society if you're not talking about it.
Yeah, it is a secret society. It's a secret society out in the open.
It's a publicly acknowledged secret society. But it is. It's a different culture, different values, different norms, different resolution, dispute resolution, right? Like,
I mean, really?
No, like Bitcoin itself is you come to a consensus. Like that's the core concept of Bitcoin is that.
You can't beef.
It's not that you can't beef. It's that the computers themselves, like the network itself, mm-hmm. works on the idea of we don't move forward until everyone agrees.
Mm-hmm. It's beautiful.
That's a great place to start. Mm-hmm. Versus, I don't know, like, I think America was probably the first analog version of that, right? Like, they set up this system of government under the idea of, well, not everyone's going to get what they want, but we can all agree and mm-hmm. move forward. And we got this far. Personally, I don't think Satoshi Nakamoto is a Japanese person. I think Satoshi Nakamoto has origins in America with, like, ideals of freedom and all that stuff that kind of embodies the American experiment. And so, yeah, we created a system or created the system of America was created that created an environment where someone would desire to create Bitcoin because they saw the ideals of America being eroded and they had the freedom to fix them. So I think that like Bitcoin is just the natural evolution of America, which is, well, we don't need all that paperwork and bureaucracy to do this part anymore.
That's interesting. You think Satoshi Nakamoto is American?
I think that
this is the first time you've said that.
That's not the best way to put it. I think that Satoshi Nakamoto, the name is just a red herring,
mm-hmm.
right? It's obviously, I mean, if it is the person's name, they could still be American, right? Like there's people in America with Japanese names. So that mm-hmm. doesn't really change anything. But what I do think is that the Bitcoin network is egalitarian as possible with the current technology that we have. Just like the United States government, when it was first created, was as egalitarian as they could make it with like within their time period. Yes, slavery, yes, all those bad parts of it, but they were still like, yeah, but like no one's king, because mm-hmm. that was like a big idea at the time. Mm-hmm. We take that for granted today, but like saying that no one's king, offering George Washington, like, do you want to be king of America? George Washington being like, no, thank you. Mm-hmm. Like all of that. I mean, I'm at the point where like, I don't even know if that all happened. It's just a really good origin story. And I think that origin story lives on in the people of today.
Teach them how to say goodbye.
Exactly. Right. But I do think
Hamilton, that, shout out.
I do think that like the idea of challenging the monetary system, specifically the biggest printer in the world is the Fed. All governments print. We print the most. So you kind of have to cut off that head in particular. But even if they're not American, at the end of the day, it's still the American idea of we should all be equal that got spread around the world via democracy, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, when we fought Japan, they had an emperor. Like, you still have an emperor.
Thailand still has a king.
They do still have a king, and he's working on staying there.
Mm-hmm.
And they're working on getting rid of him. So, like, not everything is, you know, not everything is equal all over the world, but there's people that are at the forefront of technology, of ideas, of, I don't say morals, but like, okay, the current system has created these problems. How do we fix them, right? There's people that are sitting around trying to solve these problems. And I just say Satoshi Nakamoto just said, I want to solve this money problem. Maybe it was one person, maybe it was a group of people. Doesn't matter. But they solved this money problem. Now everyone just has to accept the fact that they solve this problem. And I think that's what we're really dealing with, is a lot of people don't want to accept the fact that this problem has been solved. That's all it is. If you move your life over to Bitcoin, the problem of inflation has been solved.
Yeah. I mean, that's an interesting perspective. Let's move from one part of the world to another. Let's go to Africa. What's new in Africa?
A lot of stuff is going on in Africa. Ethiopia is building a Bitcoin mining operation. That's pretty big.
The country. Government.
The Sovereign Wealth Fund of Ethiopia is building a Bitcoin mining operation.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, okay, you were critical when it happened in the United States. What are you thinking now?
These are two very different things.
Mm-hmm.
So United States was random mayor of town plugging in a couple Bitcoin miners into City Hall.
Mm-hmm.
This is like a $250 million project, right? Like they're not equal. But it's not just, in theory, it's not just a Bitcoin mining operation. It's an energy producing operation that has a Bitcoin mining component to it that makes that energy production valuable. And, you know, there's a buyer right away. So that's a big deal. And there's a couple other countries that are doing that in Africa. Off the top of my head, I don't remember. But the bigger news is that Strike has changed their name to Strike Global. And they've just expanded to like a bunch more countries in Africa, right? I don't have the list in front of me, but it's a large list. And what this means is that now any country that's on that list can install and use Strike. Because unfortunately, they do have some financial controls on Strike. So not everyone can use Strike. Like you can't use Strike in Europe, for example.
Then what do they use in Europe? Do they use the other exchange?
Coinbase and Strike are very different.
Yeah.
If you're talking about Coinbase, I think Coinbase has at least UK Coinbase International or whatever. But in Europe, there's a couple of apps that you can buy Bitcoin on that I know of. One of them is Rely. Another one is Peach. Those are like two that I know for sure, and they're in Europe.
Why do you think Strike can't get in?
I don't think that the ECB wants Bitcoin in their world, because the Eurozone right now is broken.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just paraphrasing what I've heard. I'm not going to get into all the details of why I say it's broken, but financially, the Eurozone is broken. You got basically 1.5 countries supporting everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people in those 1.5 countries want out. And so if you make it very easy for them to buy Bitcoin, number one, and number two, once it's in Bitcoin, move their wealth out of the Eurozone, they're gonna. You know, for example, Germany, I don't know if it was Germany, but somewhere in the Eurozone, there was negative interest rates on money. So if you had money in a savings account, they were taking money out.
Like I have no words.
Right. This is what is happening, was happening.
But you said there are other apps, right? Like this Peach app.
Yeah. So
they let that one through.
But the thing with Strike is that Strike is more like Venmo. Mm-hmm. When you have an app like Strike, now I can send money from America to Europe and vice versa. And as the banking system currently works, they really want that money to move through the channels that they've already kind of established, mm-hmm. because that's how the whole thing works. Like the thing only works if you go through the banking system and everyone gets their cut as the money moves through. If you move your money into Bitcoin and then send it directly to America or vice versa and circumvent all of those banks and none of those guys get their cut, then the banks just fall apart.
But isn't that true for any Bitcoin app that would be used?
Again, Strike is more like Venmo, where you connect bank accounts to Strike. These other apps, you don't particularly connect a bank account to it. And if you do, it's got to be a specific, like these other apps, it's just in Europe. Like I can't install Peach on my phone. I can't install Rely on my phone. I can, but I can't.
Strike's the one that is working really hard to explain, to expand globally.
Yes. So Strike is trying to be global Venmo.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? You'll have one username. You can send money to anyone in the world as easily as sending a tweet or an at messaging somebody, right? That's been Jack Mahler's goal. I think he's executing on that goal. And the only reason why he hasn't fully executed on that goal is because of paperwork, mm-hmm. right? And regulations. But if the paperwork and regulation didn't exist, in theory, especially on Android, you could just put the app up for download on your website. Everyone could download it mm-hmm. and immediately be on this global money network. But you throw in things like FinCEN in the United States and like the European version of FinCEN and all these like KYC, anti-money laundering, all these rules and regulations make it so that, well, if you don't check these boxes, we got to like stop you from putting your app in the app store. This isn't a Strike problem. This is a bureaucracy problem.
So even the Android store, right?
Google will not let you install Strike in Europe. Hey gang, it's Ian. Let's chat for a second. Bitcoiner or not, I know we're all feeling anxious to save more money lately. But do you want to know why you're feeling that way? It's because you're still thinking in fiat. Seeing the price of everything go up in your local currency, that's what's driving you crazy. That's where all this anxiety is coming from. Meanwhile, the reality is everything is actually getting cheaper on Bitcoin Island. And you might ask yourself, how do I get to Bitcoin Island? Simple. Bitcoin Island is just a state of mind, and you need to train your brain to think in Bitcoin. Your first training exercise is to set a Bitcoin goal using the Satoshi Savings Calculator made by yours truly. And your goal should be to always have more Bitcoin today than you did yesterday. It's literally that simple. This way, the amount of Bitcoin you have only goes up. And once you start to think in Bitcoin, over time, everything around you becomes cheaper. You'll be way more confident about the future. No more anxiety. Look, we don't need to overcomplicate this. You're still early, but you gotta be strategic. And you gotta unlearn everything they taught you about money. So go to flirtingwithbitcoin.com and train your brain to think in Bitcoin with the Satoshi Savings Calculator.
Well, babe, how are you feeling?
Bitcoin hitting all-time highs in a bunch of countries is a very important signal that I think everyone needs to sit up and pay attention to, because the all-time high in the dollar, that almost invariably happens last, because every other currency in the world is in theory weaker than the dollar. Other central banks around the world have been printing proportionally way more money than the United States has. So when I say printing more money, they've been creating more units than the United States have. And we create a lot, but compared to the current stack, it's not that much. So for example, if you're in Turkey, who I think they had like 50 to 100%, it doesn't really matter once you're over 50%, right? But like I saw one number that said 50 just right before we started recording. So let's say you're at Turkey and it's 50% inflation. If you've been listening to this podcast, you know inflation means they're printing more money. We don't have 50% inflation in the United States. Yes, we export a decent amount of that inflation. But in the United States, we're at like 20, probably 15 to 20%, probably higher on certain goods. But when Bitcoin starts hitting all-time highs, in your currency. Don't even worry about the dollar because your currency is being devalued. People in your government are printing more money, right? They're printing money. They're going into your economy and they're buying up your assets. They're buying stuff with newly created money that they didn't work for. So when you see Bitcoin hitting an all-time high, Bitcoin is one of the things that they're buying. So they're printing money and buying Bitcoin, maybe directly, maybe indirectly. Don't look at Bitcoin as a thing that people like have to directly understand and buy. Just look at Bitcoin as like, well, once that money's created and flows to the economy, it eventually gets to someone who's a Bitcoiner, and then they buy some Bitcoin with it. Mm-hmm. So when you see the Bitcoin number in your currency rising, that's because there's more and more units of your currency in the circulation that are eventually flowing into Bitcoin. It's a great, like, there's so many things that Bitcoin is, but in this conversation, Bitcoin is the benchmark, because if Bitcoin's getting cheaper and continues to get cheaper in your currency, that means they stopped printing money. And I'll ask everyone listening, do you think anybody with the ability to print money is ever going to stop? If the answer is no, then you can assume that Bitcoin is going to go up forever, because it's just a measure, an indirect measure, but good enough to measure how many of these units exist and how much demand is there for those units. Because the less demand there are, the more you have to pay to get anything. You know, I said to someone the other day, would you rather have Jamaican J's or the United States dollar? And they were like, well, I'd obviously want the dollar. It's like, okay, do you want the United States dollar or Bitcoin? And they're like, I'd want the dollar. I'm like, that's funny, because I see the dollar as Jamaican J's.
Mm-hmm.
That's all we're talking about here. It's just a preference. There's people in Jamaica that will gladly take Jamaican J's, right? If you're in the United States and you think your money is the best, you're wrong.
That was a spirited conversation, babe.
You're welcome.
You were passionate.
I mean, I've had a couple of conversations directly and indirectly since our last recording that
have pissed you off.
It's not even that they pissed me off. I'll admit it took me 3 times for me to actually like, I need to look into this Bitcoin thing, you know? But for someone to like know me, know that I have a podcast and be able to ask any questions that they want whenever they want, and they don't, and then they just pop up one day and they're just like, hey, well, I guess I got to tell you, you're right. You were right. And I'm like, I don't want to be right. Like, I want you to succeed with me. I want you to win with me. I don't want the you were right text message. This doesn't feel good.
Mm-hmm.
It, like you were saying earlier, right? It's like, it doesn't feel good to be right about this. I just don't care about everyone. I only care about my friends.
I'm not, me
sure,
too.
Sure.
Saying, when you're saying I was virtue signaling, I'm not saying about everyone. I'm, yes, the people that we've been trying to talk to about it.
I constantly hear from people saying about me, unsolicited, Ian's so smart. Your actions tell me you don't actually believe that.
I mean, and I will always say it's about them. It's not about you.
Maybe. I don't know.
We talked about this so much in the first season, but it's an emotional process to go from thinking one thing to another. And it's a journey that they have to take their mind on. And then, especially when the price is so high, to admit that they were wrong. Like, there's a lot of emotions that have to be involved in that.
I know. I went through that.
I know you went through that, but baby, like, you got through it. You went through, you know what I'm saying? Like, somebody else who hasn't yet, like, they just haven't yet. And it's a journey that they're going to have to take. How long it takes, who knows? But I try to just not take it personally, because I don't think it's personal.
I don't think it's all personal, but I have a wide array of friends. I would say my friends are not all homogenous. They don't all fall into one category. I have different strokes for different folks, right? I've gotten some people on board faster than I expected. And I don't think they went through that journey that you're talking about. I think they just went off of, you know, Ian, I actually do think he's a smart guy. And I think Ian wouldn't be this passionate about something if he really thought this was true, right?
Yeah. And there are definitely some people who are like, I love your husband. He's a really smart guy.
So again,
like, they're like looking me dead in the eyes like, you know how smart he is? And I'm like, yes, I know how smart he is.
I don't hear these conversations.
You don't hear these conversations, right? But it's a very like, do you recognize that your husband is a very smart person? Like, to kind of be like, are you giving him shit? And I'm like, no. I know my husband is very smart. I support him.
Whoever that is, shout out to that person.
It's multiple people, babe.
Shout out to those people. shout out to everyone who needs shouting out. But my point is that, like, I have friends who, even before I was as committed to this or as convicted in this as I am today, were like, yeah, no, like, you're probably right because you're usually right about this stuff. And maybe what they did was considered reckless to a certain degree, right? But they at least bought some Bitcoin, right? They didn't push all their money into Bitcoin and, you know, go crazy, but they were like, I'm going to put some money into Bitcoin because Ian said so. And then before they sold it, they were like, do you think I should sell it? And by that point, I was like, I don't think you should sell it. I've learned a lot. This ain't a stock. You know, this is something new. There's only so much of it. And if you sell it, you will probably not get it back. So person took in information from me, made a decision. Before they were going to change that decision, ask my opinion again. To me, that's someone that's like showing respect towards my intelligence that they've said, I think you're a smart person. If someone else says, I think you're a smart person, and then in that same scenario, just argues with me for multiple years about it, I don't think you think I'm a smart person. I don't think you think that. I don't know
totally
what you think. I
totally understand the path that takes for you to get there and why you think that and why it feels that way. But I still think it tells you more about the person than it does about you.
I'm not saying that I disagree with that statement. I'm saying that this is showing me a lot about my friends. That's what I'm saying.
I want to play a game. It's a new game. I want to close out our episodes with this.
Okay.
It's going to be called Satoshi for Your Thoughts.
How many?
One.
One Satoshi?
Okay, 10 Satoshis for your
thoughts. Mean, I just...
It depends on the day. It depends on how much it's going to cost.
I'm just saying, whatever number we pick today, we're going to look back on it. So how far in the future do you want to look back on the number you
say? I'm going to say 2 Satoshis for your thoughts.
All right.
I'm going to manifest that Satoshis are going to be worth a cent soon.
Okay. That's right. $1 million Bitcoin.
Yes, exactly.
$1 million Bitcoin is sat penny parity.
Yeah, right? That's the dream. Satoshi, 2 Satoshis for your thoughts, Ian. Dota Satoshis. When you are thinking about how people are, as you were just describing, where do I fall there?
About Bitcoin?
Yes.
I'm not going to get into all the examples where I come to this, but I think that you have seen me be right enough where you're willing to ride it out, right? But technically, you haven't bought any Bitcoin.
I bought a little and I transferred to you.
Right. Yeah, but like technically, you don't have an hourly buy. You don't buy on a regular basis. You haven't moved your retirement account, right? Like, so in a way, like your actions also show, well, at the bare minimum, Ian's doing it for us. So I'm in it. I'm not like arguing with him to stop, right? Mm-hmm. So there's that, right? But I think you're not arguing with me to stop because technically in this moment and going forward, I'm right.
It's so interesting to me that you view all of this in my opinion of you and not like my opinion of Bitcoin.
I think your opinion of Bitcoin was originally heavily influenced of your opinion of me.
Yeah.
Right? So like I would say
my openness to it.
But
my
like hypothetically, this is a great question or 2 cents. Let's just like switch the game up a little bit.
Oh.
And say, instead of Bitcoin, I had come to you with Ethereum.
Mm-hmm.
And everything you know today about Ethereum, knowing all of that, I was like, we should be in Ethereum. Would you be in Ethereum? Because technically Ethereum
I don't think we'd have a podcast about it.
We probably would have a podcast about it.
Because there weren't like incredibly interesting facts about Ethereum.
Well, my point is that technically, financially, I would be right with Ethereum also right now.
Ethereum just aligns with Bitcoin, right?
I mean, all the cryptos mm-hmm. are up, right? If I had come to you with the same conviction about Ethereum that I did about Bitcoin, I think you still would have gone with me because you'd be like, ah, Ian's usually right about this stuff. That's what I'm saying.
That's so interesting. I don't know if I would let us be all in. I think I would argue with you more about how comfortable and secure and safe and not worried I am. I don't know.
But my point is that like, it's not how you'd feel today. I'm talking about when I first came to you because like
that was like a year before.
That was like a year or two before the podcast, right?
Yeah.
So like my point is that like I didn't know everything that I know today. Mm-hmm. I just came to you with like my best impression, which was like, there's something going on here. This is a new thing.
With it, yeah.
And I think this is the one.
And we would have been wrong.
Well, morally we would be wrong, but financially we would also be right now. Right. There's been a lot of crazy things that happened in Ethereum that have been a lot harder to like game plan around and right. Like know what moves to make, but like fundamentally Ethereum is also up. Like Ethereum used to be $100. It's like $3,200 now. The reason why I say it like that is I think your initial impression of Bitcoin comes from your impression of me. And then you let me teach you about it. And in teaching you about it, and I'm explaining to you like why I'm in it and the reasons, it's like, well, that's why that's your opinion of me, right? Like by teaching you about Bitcoin, it's like, yes, of course Ian would be involved in this thing. That's this thing that he thinks is good and true and like is more fair.
Yeah.
Right. Like that's Ian. That's Ian's thing. Right.
Yeah.
And so
not evil,
yeah, or at least try not
to be evil. Very important to Ian.
And so, right. And so like, I think those factoids are what kept you in it and got you to the podcast and got us to this conversation today. But had it been Ethereum, I think you would have given me the same credit in the beginning because of your opinion of me. But I think you would be saying like, but isn't that wrong?
No, I think I would be like, I just don't feel comfortable with all of our money being in this.
That's fair.
Yeah, I think I would. I think with Bitcoin, you were like, no, Mandanam, this is it. This is the next thing. We have to do this. We should do this. We should do this. I was like, okay. Like, I understood that you were like, you're not getting it yet, but we need to do this. And I was like,
I guess.
Yeah.
This is the problem with hypotheticals. Like, it's like, you don't know how anybody would react. Like,
yeah.
Maybe. I don't know.
I just feel like Ian is a planner, right? I think Ian would react. I think if either of us came to each other and was like, babe, I can't explain this to you, but we need to do this right now. The other would be like, let's do it.
maybe.
Yes, yeah. In the moment. Like, I can't talk right now, but.
Yeah, sure, probably. I would ask, what are you doing?
But on the way, yeah, when we're running to the car. Okay, okay. Yeah.
All right.
It's good to know that you're like my ride or die, but like not really. I need to know all the details first.
Not all the details. But
and why
we
gotta die? Why can't we just, you know,
not all the details, but it's like, you know, is it life or like if it's a we might die thing? Like, yes, okay, I'm running with you.
Or am I just like dramatically pranking you?
Yeah. It's like, I need to know, like, are they coming for
us?
I'm
not a prankster.
Like, it's like, are they coming for us or are we just getting ahead of them coming for us? Like, which one is it?
One of my favorite things about you is that you don't like being scared and you don't like scaring people. It's just a level of nonsense that you don't bring into my life that I really appreciate. So like, I would never, if I came to you with like such intensity, like we're in danger, like it's going to be real because I'm not going to fake a situation that might scare you. Yeah. You don't like being scared.
No, I do not like being scared.
No. you like clutch your pearls whenever you're accidentally scared by something.
That's not true.
It is.
That is not true.
It's very true.
I just don't like being scared. I don't like the amount of effort people put into scaring you. You could use that brain power to do something to make me smile, make me laugh, to like improve my day. And instead, you literally tried to traumatize me. Like you woke up in the morning, you ate breakfast because you needed the energy.
You babe
to plan
it was never me.
How to scare me.
I don't scare you.
And on top of that, like, you use things that you know about me and my fears to try to scare me. I do not appreciate that. I don't understand the logic behind it. It strikes me as a very odd behavior.
It's different senses of humor, but that's what I'm saying.
Yes, everyone else gets to laugh.
I like that you and I, like, it's an unspoken boundary that I brought up today. Finally, we spoke about it. I appreciate it. And I just want you to not live in fear that I'm going to be doing that to you because I'm not going to.
You'd get one and then I'll express to you how that was not a good idea.
I think that's what happened once. Did I like do the, oh, sorry, the TV's broken, smashed glass or something? I think I did that to you and you were not pleased. And after that, I was like, all right, we're not doing this again. But that was just your TV, but you love your TV.
I do not love my TV. I was more annoyed that you tried to do that because it was so obvious that it was fake.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just looked and I was like, really?
I feel like you kind of believed it for a second.
No, I did not.
Yeah, you were just disappointed. I can't believe you're trying to prank me.
what is this? Again, you could use that energy to do so many other things. Like so many other things. You could bake cookies with that energy. This is how you
know that Ian didn't have a little sister and that I am a little sister. So it comes out in me sometimes. But again, look, boundary respected, babe. Great Bitcoin episode tonight.
Yeah.
Are you loving season 3?
Yeah, I'm happy that we're recording again.
Yeah, there's so much that was going on tonight that we didn't get to even talk about FUD. So we're going to have to leave that for next week. I really don't believe that it's the end of FUD, but I guess we'll have to find out. Thanks for listening to the show.
Now, let's get you set up on Fountain so you can start earning some money simply by listening to podcasts.
Go to fountain.fm to download the app.
Once your app is set up, search for Flirting with Bitcoin and hit follow.
Listen to our show and episodes from your other favorite podcasts to earn your first Satoshis, which are fractions of a Bitcoin.
And make sure to keep an eye out for our promoted episodes.
You can earn up to 100 Satoshis just for listening.
Pretty cool, huh?
You can use those sats you've earned to send us a boost, like a little payment with a message.
And I swear, we try to respond to everyone.
Every episode, we shout out the top boosters.
To support us or other podcasters with more sats, you can top up your Fountain wallet with a bank card or Lightning transfer from apps like Strike or Cash App.
The easiest way to learn is to get started.
Now, you're all set up for podcasting 2.0.